Welcome to Parley at the Hindu, where we try and bring together a 360-degree view of one of the biggest issues of the day. Today, we're discussing the rights and wrongs of what are called transnational targeting and assassinations, especially when it comes to suspected terrorists. We're looking at recent allegations by the US, by Canada, by Pakistan, and the government's responses to them. And with me are Ambassador Rakesh Sood, former diplomat, India's ambassador to Afghanistan, to France and Nepal. He's the former prime minister's special envoy on disarmament, and he writes on diplomacy today. Also joining us, Dr. Tara Karta, who is Director for Research at the Center for Land Warfare Studies and was at the National Security Council Secretariat for nearly two decades. Thank you so much for speaking with us at the Hindu. I wanted to actually just start, if I could, maybe first with you, Ambassador Sood, and ask that question. Is there a line that is drawn between legitimate and illegal targeting of terrorists or suspected terrorists abroad? Because many times the question comes up, is there a double standard? The US can go in and take Osama bin Laden out in Pakistan, the Mossad does it in other countries. But when it comes to India, there's a question raised, Russia, there were many questions raised and sanctions imposed. So is that a double standard or is there some kind of an international rule surrounding transnational killings?
Well, I mean, there is no clear definition in international law of targeted killings in that sense. But what has happened conventionally is that, let's say if there is an individual who is internationally designated as a terrorist, which means it would be he or she would be designated as a terrorist under the UN, United Nations Security Council designation list, number one. Number two, on top of that, there is a very clear sense that it is very difficult to get hold of this person or get the person extradited or in any way brought to face judicial proceedings. And add to that, a third factor that if it is felt that the person continues to remain engaged in terrorist activity and so therefore a state feels that it is preferable and to use lethal force in a preemptive fashion in a manner in which it is precise so that it does not cause additional damage or does not collateral damage or kill other people, innocent people, etc., then that is seen in common parlance. That is what is called a targeted killing. And you would say that the killing of Osama bin Laden by the United States would probably fall into that kind of a category because Osama bin Laden fits into all the three. He ticks off all three boxes. When he was designated as an international terrorist, he continued to remain the head of Al-Qaeda. And there was no possibility that, you know, he could not be found or whatever. And there was no possibility that he could have been extradited or anything like that. So that's, however, having said that, there are plenty of other instances where these three conditions, which are normally used, these are not legal definitions. As I said, there is no legal definition in international law. But these three conditions, where these are fulfilled, there is less of international hue and cry. And in other cases, there would be obviously more, where these conditions don't get fulfilled.
Dr. Karta, you've of course researched for years on terrorism and what's the best response to them. Do you feel that there is that double standard internationally or is there an understood kind of line that has been drawn?
No, I think it's massively, you know, double standards because you've had this whole targeted killings has come out from what? Post 9/11, when they've used drone strike, they've used every kind of attack not just in Afghanistan, but you remember George Bush's call to the world that we will attack you wherever you are because it's self-defense. So the underlying, the underlying criteria for any such attack, targeted attack, killings, is self-defense. And it is allowed by the UN because the UN Charter says you have, Article 51 says you have a right, individual right of self-defense. Now, the thing is, if since we are talking in relation to the Guardian story, I assume, is that the problem with that article is it brings in assassinations, targeted killings, and extrajudicial killing all in the same basket, in the same article, which is crazy. Each one has a different legal, you know, connotation to it. And that is my biggest problem. The double standards is evident in all three. That's a different issue. But if we had to look at this issue, in this particular thing carefully, you have to look at the differences between these three in terms of international law and international humanitarian law.
All right. That's certainly a very interesting distinction you're making between assassinations and targeted killings. And, you know, the question is, you referred to the Guardian story, and it was a story that came out recently that basically puts the allegations Pakistan has made against India in the same box as perhaps what the U.S. has accused India of when it comes to the quote-unquote alleged assassination plot against Gurpatwant Singh Pannon, and then Canada's direct allegation that Indian government agents are suspected to be behind the killing of Harjit Singh Nijjar. So I do want to ask, firstly, do you think something has changed in India? Because in the past, perhaps, these operations took place quietly. Nobody spoke about them. But in the recent past, we're looking now at a government saying very clearly that, yes, we will chase terrorists. If they go into Pakistan, we will kill them over there. There's now, you know, a favorite kind of Hindi phrase used quite a lot by political leadership of ghar mein ghuske marna. Do you think that in fact, is legitimate? I'll start with you, Dr. Karta.
See, it is allowed under international law. There is a specific, I'll tell you, the right of force between states. There is a clause which allows that if you feel that a state may give permission for such an attack, or it may be that it is not acting against attacks against you from within its territory, you are actually allowed to exercise force in such a situation between interstate. It's also recognized under international humanitarian law. That's an interesting thing. And the only criteria in this is that it should be a state of conflict. It's not allowed in times of peace in any case. I mean, that is where the Canada one and the Pakistan one, there's a huge difference. You can argue that we are in a state of continuous conflict with Pakistan because these attacks keep taking place. You've raised it at the UN. It's allowed under domestic law because these guys are all part of your list of terrorists. So you have gone through the judicial process within your own country, and it is sanctioned by the UN. I mean, there's a whole Chatham House paper which says precisely this, which defines what is allowed interstate for the use of force between states. And this is actually quite legal if we did it. I don't know if we did.
Sure. Ambassador, so we, you know, to separate the case of Pakistan, because the allegations there are that as many as 20 separatist or wanted terrorists in Pakistan have been killed at various times by Indian intelligence agents. Do you think internationally that is something that is acceptable? I don't, again, want to conflate this with other operations we have seen, for example, 2016 Uri, the crossing of the LOC, or 2019 Balakot, the bombing of a place across the border with India. But I do want to ask specifically about these transnational alleged killings in Pakistan. Do you think they are seen as justified diplomatically?
You know, I said earlier that there are basically three criteria. The first of all,
but none of these are in that UN list.
Okay, so that is the first criteria. Okay, so they may be in an Indian list, but they are not accepted internationally as terrorists. Okay, fine. So that's distinction number one. Second, there is no prospect of getting them extradited to come and face judicial proceedings. Now, you can say that if you are in a state of conflict with Pakistan, although, I mean, I don't know legally if that is a correct. Politically, you can maintain. Yeah, you can maintain that. But you're not in a state of conflict, legal or political, with countries like Canada or United States, obviously. So that is the second. And the third is that the whole thing of self-defense and preemption with regard to exercise of preemption for self-defense purposes implies that there is a continuing and immediate threat. So did Major, Pannu, whoever else, do they constitute an immediate? And I mean, that's an intelligence assessment. And so if, depending on how you would tick these three boxes, would depend on what is the justification or credibility for a targeted killing, for a lethal action against that particular terrorist.
Fair enough. So then, Ambassador Sood, I do want to come to the question of what happened in the US and in Canada. In a sense, the sort of allegation is the same. However, in one case, there was an actual assassination. In another case, it's an alleged assassination plot. Do you think that because these two were in the US and Canada and supposedly friendly countries to India, that was the reason why the US and Canada have reacted in the way they have? After all, these are both arguably characters who India has again and again asked for a judicial process against. These are both characters seen directly almost masterminding the attacks on Indian embassies. Why do you think that the US and Canada have raised these issues at such a high profile level?
Well, because clearly we have failed to tick these boxes.
The three that you mentioned.
Yes. And that is why it has been raised at, you know, bilaterally with us.
Right. But I mean, many would make the point that the US itself, we discussed the case of Osama bin Laden, but the US has carried out drone strikes for the longest time, killed thousands, including civilians, including innocent civilians, in what they were seen as very targeted killings. They've never been held accountable for them. The Mossad has killed others in UAE and in other countries. We've seen several countries carrying out these attacks, including the countries that are accusing India today. So why do you think that the US particularly has made such an issue of this?
Well, that is bilateral politics. But you're absolutely right. The U.S. is guilty of having conducted targeted killings with less than adequate justification without having felt the need but to tick off the three boxes, which are what is conventionally kept considered acceptable. Israel has done this plenty of times. Then Israel has the backing of the United States, and the United States is is a permanent member of the Security Council. It is a major power, etc. So that's about it.
Right. Interesting, you say that it's a state also of diplomatic ties. Dr. Karta, do you think that this is in fact being raised because there was a sense that this could not be managed diplomatically behind closed doors? Because when you're looking publicly in 2023, India was hosting the G20 when the Canadian Prime Minister came here, after which he made his allegations. Prime Minister Modi had been to the United States for a very major state visit there. And just a few days before that, the US was conducting this kind of an inquiry, brought out its results in November, just a few months later. Why do you think that the US and Canada did not choose to deal with this diplomatically behind closed doors?
I think in the case of Canada, it was also a question of domestic politics. I mean, you clearly had the Prime Minister Trudeau with his, you know, trying to move people in his own constituency. That was one. And since he did it, I think the US, who would probably have preferred to have dealt with it quietly, was forced to come out and back up his stuff. But you notice, even after that, the US has not raised it in a very, in a very threatening manner. They've said, we are unhappy with this. And let's face it, any such attack, when we say that there are double standards with such attacks, that's all very well. But by and large, you don't carry out attacks in the territory of what you call friendlies. You know, that is a sort of a, the US has done that also in France. They've done all sorts of things in Europe. But by and large, that's a dictum. That is assuming that we in fact did this. But so I think politics and the fact that it gives, states will always use any stick they have to beat another country with when it wants, you know, concessions. So this, you just gave them a stick.
Certainly very interesting that India's response in each of the three cases. So if we say US, Pakistan, and Canada, India's response in each of the three cases is different. With Pakistan, India's almost saying, yes, we've done it. We will do it. You can't stop us. With Canada, it is, we have not done it. You have not proven it. And we are not interested in taking this forward. And with the US, it seems to be, okay, we'll take your allegations very seriously. We'll set up a committee, a high-level committee to look into the allegations. And now the latest is External Affairs Minister Jaishankar saying that we are conducting this investigation in the US case on Panun in India's own national security interests. So there's almost a tacit admission that there's enough evidence there for India to carry out that investigation. Dr. Karta, what do you make of the three different responses, in a sense, coming from New Delhi? Is it a factor just of ties?
I think that's a very interesting but difficult question. Yeah, in the case of Pakistan, obviously, I mean, I think what the defense minister said is, if you do this, we will reserve the right to walk in. And I think in this sense, he's referring to the post-Pulwama attacks. I mean, that's what he's sort of...
So he was asked about the Guardian story. So this was in response to
that. He also said that we want good relations with all our neighbors. So it was knowing, I mean, what the defense minister's like, it was put in a more, you know, if we would prefer to have good relations. In Canada, the fact, as far as I'm aware, is that in actual fact, no evidence has ever been given to us. And at least one of those killings was of a local organized crime leader who was already implicated in a lot of trouble within Canada itself. So there definitely are, contradictions in those stories, which is apparent even to me, even if I'm outside the system. Third is the fact that in the US, when they say as a national interest, if indeed an RNAW person from another paramilitary force did indeed conduct this, I can virtually guarantee that the NSA was not involved, because he's far too good to undertake such a ham-handed operation. I mean, it's unbelievable to somebody like me that anybody would do something so foolish. It's just a height of foolishness, the way he did it.
Certainly, but it also leads to the question then that if our systems are so good, how does a rogue agent even get this kind of ability to do this?
Indeed, that is certainly the case, and which is why probably Jaishankar said that in our own interest, we may as well investigate how did this man have the bandwidth to do this?
Right. Ambassador Sood, how do you see the three very disparate responses to these allegations?
Purely a reflection of politics with the states. Very simply. I look at it in a very realist fashion. I don't think there is any other explanation for it. And I would just say that the defense minister, since India is now in election mode, the defense minister is speaking to a country that is in the throes of elections. So whether he is talking of targeted killings, yes, you are right. He may have been questioned with regard to the story in the Guardian, but whether he's responding to it as targeted killings or whether he's responding to it in terms of surgical strikes or whatever he is.
Hot pursuit.
I mean, it's just a hot pursuit, surgical strikes. I mean, it is politicians at the best of times are not necessarily very precise with their use of words, and at election times even less so. So that's about it.
So you're saying it's basically a factor of diplomatic ties with each of these countries. Even so,
levels of, I would say, not a fracture, but I would say it is a reflection of the status of the importance that is attributed to the ties with each of the countries and the current state of play in each of the countries.
With the best of those ties with the United States, do you think these allegations have a long-term impact?
Well, it depends on how we deal with it. And if we are able to, with whatever the internal investigation that we do, if we are able to carry conviction, it's not a question, I'm not too bothered about the outcome. It's a question of whether we are able to carry conviction to the U.S. system. And insofar as Canada is concerned, so far we've maintained that they haven't shared any information or intelligence or anything like that with us. Or at least nothing to the extent that would lead us to undertake an investigation of the kind that we are doing vis-a-vis the U.S. Information that has been shared with us. Pakistan, of course, it is one season.
Right. Certainly until after elections. Dr. Karta, do you think the allegations by the U.S., India's response to them, have had some kind of bearing on India-US ties, and will they impact them in the long run? Because now there are many who have analyzed and spoken about a kind of certain stasis in the high-level engagement between the two countries. Do you think there's been an impact?
Some impact, because it is being said publicly, and we know as a democracy, when the spokesperson is asked a question, he may or may not respond to it in a particular way, which he has. He said, we will follow this up. That is a definite, statement. However, I remember during that time, when all this was taking place, there was a joint exercise going on. There's all that has been going on side by side. So that flow will not be interrupted. And especially since I think most observers think, that the political stability, if you want to call it that, will continue. So, in the case of Canada, if I can just go back a minute, he also made the unpardonable error of saying this in public. If he had probably said it in private to people and said, look, yeah, this is what is going on, our reaction may have been quite different. But going back, just because you did get the attention you wanted in Delhi, and you go back and say this in Parliament, I think that was in very bad taste. So that's a separate thing. But overall, no, I don't think Indo-US ties are going to be very severely affected, because our ties elsewhere in other areas, especially in innovation, in defense, in technology, there are hundreds of areas, as you know, where we are cooperating.
Okay. Final question. I ask this because in the last few months, we have seen certain comments being made, for example, in the US Congress, their Senate Foreign Relations Committee has talked about transnational killings and put India in the same category as they put Russia, Iran, and China. This is possibly a first. It is a first that we are hearing these kind of allegations being made publicly. I think even from Pakistan, we have not had these kind of specific allegations being made before January this year. So my question is, how does India avoid international criticism over something like this, while keeping its obviously chosen muscular position when it comes to terrorism? What would you suggest the government should do in the months going forward? Dr. Karta?
I just want to recall an instance where there was a hearing on Pakistan in the US Congress, only on Pakistan. Yes. And one of the congressmen intervened to raise this issue of this alleged killing. So there are constituencies in the US which have a large Pakistani population, like Texas. This senator was from congressman was from Texas. That will reflect in their domestic policy. So while it is worrisome, I mean, it's something which has never happened before, as you said, it's something you have to take in your stride. Going forward, I think a little more, we need to pull up our international image and our international are strategic messaging. And for some reason, we seem to think it's not necessary that our economy speaks for itself, our words speak for themselves. No, you have to, I think, do a major PR exercise because it's good for you, not because XYZ has said something, but because it makes sense.
Sure, that's important. I mean, I should point out that while many of the congressmen may have been speaking in that, in the Pakistan session, there's also a statement made by four congressmen of Indian origin, very specifically saying India must show that it is taking these charges seriously. Ambassador Sood, how would you respond? What do you think India needs to do in the future?
Well, I think I would, first of all, I would suggest that, with regard to India-US ties, India-US ties are at a government-to-government level, the official ties. And from what I recall, I think that the US NSA is supposed to be visiting
Yes. And so the foreign secretary is due to visit there.
Correct. And thereafter, the NSA is supposed to come for the ICEP, the critical emergency. So in that sense, I don't think that it has had that kind of an impact, number one. Number two, I would agree with Dr. Karta that, democracies speak with multiple voices because there are multiple constituencies. So a statement by one section of society doesn't necessarily reflect the totality of the relationship between the two countries. However, having said that, I would also, as you said that these four congressmen who said that India should be able to. So this basically echoes what I said earlier, that whatever action we take is intended to also carry conviction to those who have raised this. Since we are attributing importance to these criticisms or to these comments. One way is that we just ignore them. But then that is a difficult kind of a thing to do when in a relationship between two democracies where with very vibrant medias and all the rest of it. So since we can't ignore them, then obviously we need to be able to take action that would address this. Now, whether this is in terms of more effective communication strategies, whether it is in terms of, doing the necessary due diligence and homework at home in order to put out certain messaging. But that is a strategy which the government has to evolve in terms of taking into account, because as a democracy, we also have multiple channels of communication. So it doesn't necessarily have to be the spokesperson speaking to the other spokesperson or something like that. We need to be able to make better use of these multiple channels of communication.
All right. I thank so much, both of you, for drawing light really on what is a very complex problem that brings into legitimacy of what would otherwise be seen as extrajudicial transnational killings. The response of the Indian government in the next few months, of course, as you pointed out, will decide really the future of how ties with all these countries will go on this issue. But I'd like to thank you, Dr. Tara Karta, Ambassador Rakesh Sood, for speaking to us at The Hindu.
Thank you.